Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. You're getting it right with Dr. Bowles. You had a chance to peruse the marquee you would see today. I am talking about migrant children in the United States. And I was a bit shocked when I first started discovering that there are such a thing. When I had worked in other states where there are crops that are harvested, and I know that many would go to Mexico or assist people crossing the border to help harvest crops. And I saw this in South Carolina and other states, southern states. But I never thought about there being a constitutive or continuous group of children in these United States who are worse than, in my opinion, the migrant workers' children, because on the face of things, they're living in the richest country in the world. They're living in a place, home of the free. And when you take a close look at it, it is a horrendous, painful situation. I know in our Northeast states, and when I first became introduced to the concept of homeless, and that usually referred to someone who had once been in a mental health institution, and under our president's decision making, I think it was President Nixon, that there'd no longer be institutions available for people who needed medical care for mental health, and they were turned on the street. I remember when I was in medical school in Pennsylvania, we had the Western Psychiatric Institute on campus at the University of Pittsburgh. And therefore, we had a resident bevy of homeless people who stayed close to the hospital because they got their medicines and did their periodic checkups so that they could get their Social Security support checks. And I can remember my fascination to identify with a group of people pushing grocery carts or sleeping over heat vents or sitting on the curbs of major highways or major thoroughfares in Pittsburgh and just talking with them and seeing what their world was like. I got a firsthand anecdotal experience with the schizophrenic, when you can meet them and they'd be pleasant and clear, and then another time they would be very hyper and very verbose, and they were always disheveled and often unclean, and periodically they'd come through what we knew here in Louisiana as a big charity system, and the residents would take pity and give them either the paper suits that often we had to wear in the emergency room if we'd soiled our scrubs, and they became part of the community. Well, these were all adults, and they always had a story. And there was a moment of lucidity if they were on medication. What I'm talking about is an innocent victim, very innocent. I am becoming more and more introspective. I look at the world's problems, and they're this group or that group, and they're saying how pitiable women in certain countries are, girls are married into, put into marriage, being the throes, as well as actual marriages under the age of 13. There are all kind of biases against women being able to go to school and the limitations and so forth. And then I have to stop short and say, stop looking outside of America. Just take a moment and look at what our own dirty linen has. And I tell you, it is abysmal. I have a very difficult time looking at global opinions and chastisements and embargoes placed on countries because we have taken this greater than thou, mightier than thou, aristocratic position that we can judge and decide and punish, chastise, and so forth. But yet, in the underbelly of the United States of America, that which is not published in the newspaper, not put on the front page, not in the entertaining circle, not on the red carpet, but very real to so many of us. Those of us who are in clinical medicine, we meet the social travesties that give rise to disease and cancer and defect. And as I've moved more into the current event or activist role, looking at what's going on in the nation, knowing how the disparities in medical care is literally taught from the beginning and denied from the top. I looked at something, I'm working with someone who's very interested in getting a charter school in Louisiana. We are number 44 out of 50 from the educational point of view. Now, there are some superb schools because there are some very wealthy people in Louisiana, but that is not how the majority of public schools are. And the few people who want to fix what they think is wrong and have gone to the charter school or private school sector, there's always another barrier, another question. Well, in looking at the possibility of getting a charter school started, I've talked to a number of people because I like to do marketing research and be thorough. And I found out that there are children in central Louisiana, and I'm sure all over the state, can't speak for any other state, that are considered migrant. And when I heard the term, I said, what do you mean? It seems that children whose parents, either one or both, who are incarcerated, are in limbo. I mean, we have this act that was put in place that says that children can be taken from a family and put into foster care or adopted out. It's called termination of parental rights. And they also have something called Safe Family Act. And all of this, though it sounds like it may be a charitable gesture, the bottom line is it's not well orchestrated, and it certainly is not best for the family unit. Whenever you hear a phrase, war against drugs, you might as well say war against the black family or war against the Hispanic family, because disproportionately black and brown-skinned people are incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. I have some statistics posted that more than 2.7 million children in the United States have an incarcerated parent. I just want that to soak in. 2.7 million children have a parent that is incarcerated in the United States. But this is the home of the free. I mean, I can't help but just see how we claim and disclaim, and the reality is it is not panning out. One in nine black American children, that's more than 10% of all black American children. In fact, it's 11.4% have an incarcerated parent. One in 28 Hispanic children, that's 3.5%, have an incarcerated parent. Incarcerated parents lose their parental rights at a disproportionate rate due to what we passed, the United States passed, the Adoption and Safe Family Act. Sounds wholesome and wonderful. What it says that if you're in jail greater than 180 days, you can get your child taken away from you. Now, if the act of incorporation was uniform and always just, and you say, okay, the person did some harm, so the child shouldn't be exposed. But that's not the case in these United States. If you're black, your chances of being incarcerated or locked up for absolutely nothing are very high. If you're following the news, a little bit they let leak out, Louisiana is being hit left and right by United States judicial investigations. New Iberia, which is one of the cities in Louisiana, had a very, very controversial killing. I guess it's 3 or 4 years ago. A young man was in the back of a police car, shot in the back, and they called it suicide. And our local U.S. appointed attorney general said that we will not investigate further. Well, someone shook the bushes hard enough because now we have the federal judicial department indicting a sheriff in New Iberia and indicting a warden in a prison that is in the same area. It seems that the prison warden was sanctioning taking prisoners out and beating them, and they would remove them from the facility because the facility has cameras. And of all places they were transporting this prisoner was to a church where he was beaten for whatever, that they felt that incarceration wasn't sufficient and they needed further chastisement in the personalized manner of beating. Now that the federal eyes were on that, I'm wondering if Mr. or Reverend White is his name, if his son will ever get justice, and just how hard will they look. Sometimes they come in, they do a little, and they leave. We've had an investigation in East Baton Rouge. We've had an investigation in New Iberia. We've had a new investigation in Lafayette. And I have some personal knowledge of where some investigations might need to be focused. But we're here in these United States, and we can turn and sanction another country. We can say that we disapprove of this and that. But I don't see the same eyes turned inward and the corrections made here at home. So the Safe Family Act is very disruptive. Children are not adopted readily. Consequently, they're in foster care. Foster care is very burdened. So if you don't have a social worker who's on her toes, the things she can miss, when you do foster care, they don't keep social or cultural boundaries. In fact, if it's a black child, going to a white family is more likely than going to a black family, and that they can be shifted or shuffled, if you like, every few years. There is no continuity of love. There's no continuity of education. So what does that have to do with migrant children? Well, here in Alexandria, Louisiana, when I'm working with a group that's trying to get a charter school, I ask the question, who are the target persons that you are thinking when you say charter school? And they said, oh, people in this area. And I'd been in the area a number of times, and I just didn't see a lot of children. And I questioned, well, what children? They said, oh, they will be back. That there is a group of people who live in a less than, in my opinion, stable home. They're trailers, or trailer parks is how they refer to them here in Louisiana. And it seems they can pay some very small amount of money to some absent landlord, and the families will live there 3 to 4 months and then pick up and go. Where do they go, I ask? And so, oh, some relative, probably, maybe even to upstate, and they'll stay 2 or 3 months, and it usually happens around the time there is a tax rebate or they have some big surge of income. And when they have a little extra money, they travel. And when all that money is used up, they come back. And I said, what happens to the child's education? And there was silence. And I said, so a child is pulled out of school, moved somewhere you don't know where, maybe gone 6 weeks to 3 months, and then they return. And I could not help but think of the people walking around in Pennsylvania who were pushing their shopping carts and living out of their shopping carts and sleeping under the bridges and saying, I met them as adults who, for whatever reason, chose to be on the street. What do you do when you are a child? And you have no choice. You have no voice. And when I did a little more research and started looking at incarceration rates, for those of you who don't know, Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate in the world. I said it, world. Didn't say United States. I said world. And of those incarcerated, I did some numbers for you. And they're not pretty. 60% of people in prison now are racially and ethnically minorities. I mean, they're black or they're Hispanic. 2/3 of those incarcerated are women of color. That's 66%, 2/3. Most prisons are not accessible by any form of public transportation, and that restricts any kind of child-parent visit. And in some cases, this means that children will never see their parents once they've been incarcerated. So if a child is 5 years old and mom gets arrested and she does a 12 to 15 year term, child is an adult and has never seen mother because she cannot travel to the prison, and therefore you've orphaned a child. And for what? Let me tell you what they put black people and brown people in prison for. Well, in 2010, 1.5 million people were in state or federal prison in the United States, and 92% of the people in these prisons were male. 43% of those that were sampled in this particular group of 1.5 million were in federal prisons 500 miles away from their last residence. In other words, no possibility of a child interacting with that adult as a parent-child situation. In 2010, 93% of federal prisoners were convicted of nonviolent crime. What does that mean? That means they had some marijuana, or they had some crack, or they were shoplifting, or something that had nothing to do with rape, nothing to do with a battery, nothing to do with aggressive things like murder or attempted murder. 90%+ were there for something other than a violent crime. If you're following the news, in 2012, there was a move when marijuana was becoming a drug that was popularized and okay in most states. There was some movement saying, well, if somebody's in prison for marijuana, especially if they got a life imprisonment, yes, folks, you can get life in prison for marijuana because Bill Clinton signed into law third strike. So third strike could put a man in prison, particularly if he's black, for the rest of his life, and his offense could be a nonviolent crime. Well, there was some move to evaluate the amounts of drugs that were called third strikes and what the drug was, and I didn't get full statistics, but I know some people were released. But that's as close as I've ever seen the Judicial Department to stand up and say what we've done is wrong, the people are falsely incarcerated, and we need to correct it. No one says it. No one does it. I know in this campaign for president, Bill Clinton admitted that because of him, more black Americans have been incarcerated in the history of the United States. I go silent to give you a moment. The Clinton, Bill Clinton, the husband of Hillary, who's asking us to vote for her and put her in office the way her husband was in office. Statistics show that if the trends continue, that one in every three black males born today can expect to go to prison in his lifetime. Now, that is quite a statement. So I find it very difficult to get excited and say, gee, look what's going on in Africa or Nigeria or Kenya, or gee, look what's going on in North Korea or in some parts of Russia. I have a problem worrying about girls who can't get an education when they live in India or Syria, when I know that there are children in Louisiana who cannot get an education because they are not in any kind of a stable household, that they are doomed by their migratory behavior not to complete school in any one school system. And if they're living in Louisiana, they're already at the bottom rail of educational potential, and then you're missing class to boot. And that is totally separate from the post-traumatic stress and social indignations that comes along with being a child of an incarcerated person. I find it difficult to go beyond the boundaries and look for something to feel enraged about. I wish the world were a happier place. I wish there were no sex slaves and young girls didn't worry about getting an education or having to get married by 12, 10, 11. But right here on the doorstep, in your face, if you like, there are a huge percentage of children, American-born, American-bred, not immigrant, not alien, true heritage Americans. No birth certificate verification required, who are living at a level that is equivalent to any country that mistreats children. Yes, America, you're guilty. United States of America, you are guilty. The underbelly of this country is slowly being revealed to the world. You can thank the different presidential candidates who have aired the dirty language, the dirty laundry, who have, indicted America by allowing the most racist persons to have a voice and having it publicly displayed, that there are nations expressing concern that if a person who espouses a hate of Muslim and a hate of Mexicans and a hate of black people should become president of what is considered one of the most powerful nations in the world, Are we not recreating the dynamics that Germany suffered in the late 1930s and early 40s? And there has been a discussion. There is an outcry. And for those of us who live in the United States, who bought into the land of the free and the brave, who, by my parents' insistence, believed that Black America and White America could come together, we could integrate, and that there would be a justice to all in this land of the free. And in all the years now, I've gone to the different academic institutions, and I've learned with the best of them. I've worked with the best of them. And I know the worst of them. And I see the worst of them in the eyes of the poor and the neglected. I know the worst of them when I hear slighting comments. And I think, I'm sorry, Daddy. I was so focused not to let you down. I studied hard and stayed on the right lane and jumped through the hoops and stayed away from the controversy and got the degrees on their terms and learned to speak the language and all the stuff the good girls do and all the academic requirements that was put out there. And I have to confess that it was never enough. That before I can ever present a credential, those who can lay their eyes on me will make a determination of me. And in the words of Martin Luther King, when he dreamed, when he dreamed that having a skin color that was darkened would not be a barrier for truth and justice. Well, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., I would apologize to you. Just looking at the presidential campaign, and when you have a Black female who would attend a Donald Trump campaign and be hit in the face, knocked down, beaten because she was there and she was Black. I don't know how to explain it. I don't even know that rage, and I don't care to understand it. I do wish that whatever it is that incites that kind of fear/hate could be internalized. If I had the power, anyone with those strong feelings, I'd just have them implode. Let them, you know, you sit like that little commercial you have now where the head pops off with powder, purple powder. It's some commercial where you can buy something online and the price is so great that it just blows the mind. I wish that that kind of hate and that kind of venom would just self-destruct, just let them implode, and you wouldn't have to be reactive. So one of my greatest fears and one of the things I work hardest to is to maintain a balance within myself, that I don't want to be reactive. I want to be able to feel my feelings and emote according to my personal internal self and not have to be protective or defensive or offensive to survive. I'm following a number of young activists, and Michelle Alexander is one, and she's written a couple of books that are very powerful, and she is a lawyer, and she told her story of how she was a prosecutor. And she bought into it, as we would say, she drank the Kool-Aid of establishment and felt very hostile to many minorities because they were the scum of the earth. And what was the words Mrs. Hillary Clinton used? You know, they were bestial. They were less than, you know, like an animal. They were ferocious. And slowly, somehow, she became aware that, in fact, what many of her young Black males had told her, that they place drugs there and then charge us with the drug and put us in prison. And that has now been uncovered to be the case, particularly in Louisiana and I'm sure in other places as well, because the police had the power. They were all powerful. and they could create what they wanted to get their end desired results. And there's been discovery that a number of police officials in powerful positions were also members of the hate group Ku Klux Klan. And if you are in one coven where you are dedicated to defile and demean and reduce and annihilate a people, and then you are also in a position where you can declare that person guilty, worthy of death or long sentences for trivial offenses, there's something wrong with that. If they force you to take MMPI, a personality type test, to know whether or not you should go to a police academy, then how can they allow your mixed, or how can I say, conflicting position unless they too endorse the thinking of what is now dubbed the terrorist types of organization? When asked, one of the presidential, they asked Trump if he felt good being endorsed by David Dukes, who is a second generation of vile Ku Klux Klan person, and Trump was unable to give an unequivocal answer, that he hedged on it. He wasn't sure, he didn't know. And I grew up knowing that you get a burning cross. I grew up in the state of North Carolina, and it was a burning cross on your lawn as a warning. And it was generally placed there if you were any position in the community. If a black person was a minister or had some community leadership qualities, the warning to better bring them back in line or teach them their place, they would put a burning cross on your lawn. And for someone who knows the history, I mean, it's written about, it's understood, Stone Mountain in Georgia is famous. And then you'd be equivocal, say, I don't know, I'm not sure. Well, I know I can't solve all the problems, not in my weekly discussions. I am so dismayed to know how grand, how enormous, how huge, how pitiable the concept of migrant children in the United States really is. And to know that in central Louisiana, there are quite a number. Since no one really, to my knowledge, has ever looked at this as a problem, or from anything I could find in research, have ever reported this as a problem. However, if you talk to people local, they know their migration. They'll say, oh, they'll be back. They left, but they will be back. And those who become economically advantaged by this migratory behavior, yes, there are those who have these almost inhabitable trailers. I didn't know what to refer to them as. They're tubes. They're trucks or just empty cans that are, I guess, anywhere from 30 feet long and 8 feet wide that people live in and call home. And they live there and pay a rent to someone who owns this trailer. And whenever they pick up and go, the people who own the trailer say, oh, they'll be back. So you don't dismantle it. You don't move it. You just wait for these migrant population to return. So that's what I wanted to tell you about today. The migrant children of Louisiana are in these United States. And I was reading some writings by Michelle Alexander when she quoted Dr. Martin Luther King when he said, there is a thriving system of racial and social control in the United States, and it's called the penal system. Statistics verify it. The outcome from the standpoint of education verifies it, and from the fracture of the Black American family, it is verified. So there's definitely the connection between wars and the utter indifference that the United States have shown towards poor people. And they are doing it to right here, people at home. We don't have to look across the oceans, across the sands, to find this major travesty and the victims of war. So with that, I thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to next time, getting it right with Dr. Bowles. Bye now.